I'm also interested in how it enables things to emerge. So it's a curates a condition for things to surface, the unseen to be suddenly seen or the unheard to be heard. And in the West, we answer the question before we understand the problem. And in the silence, there's a kind of prolonging an understanding of the nature of a problem. And then we can move forward with purpose.
Welcome to episode 3 of our 3-part series, Silence Beyond Sound. Hi, I'm Timothy Maurice, your behavioral psychology author, and I've had so much fun researching and producing this series. To close out this series, I'm in conversation with one of the most brilliant people I know. He studied theater in both Japan and Russia. His name is Colin Skelton. I'll share his TED Talk link in the notes so you can experience him visually. But I want you to imagine you're in conversation with one of your favorite people. Now imagine that in between what's being said, in the spaces between what you're saying to each other, there is silence. One of the central key ideas of this episode, I want you to keep in mind, is it possible that the space between what's being said is more important than what's said? Colin and I explore how slowing down in life can be the bridge to silence and unleashing creativity. Allow us to work through our thoughts and be patient as the insight emerges. You'll really enjoy this conversation if you do. Colin is a powerful global experience learning facilitator, the founder of Move Your Thinking. There was just no better way to end this series than with him. Meet Colin Skelton. Enjoy. Hi, Colin, man. Thank you so much, bro. I really appreciate you making time for this conversation.
Hey, Timothy. Great, man. Really, always good to chat to you.
Yeah, man. So I wanted to track you down. I know you're on the road, but I was like, there's no better person to help me close out this 3-part podcast series on silence. And my mind start racing back. You know, when I look at your experience in Japanese and Russian philosophy and you know, part of why I wanted to tap you on this is the conversation that you and I had a while ago on this Japanese concept called ma. Share with us.
Yeah, ma. So just a little bit of context. I had the privilege of being able to spend 8 months in Japan and submerged in mostly context of theater in Tokyo. And the concept of ma, of course, it's not only limited to theater, but it exists throughout Japanese society and manifests in very interesting ways. So ma basically means distance, pause, talking to Japanese people. You know, in the West, we're so used to talking and talking and talking and filling every moment with noise. And if there's a silence, then it's normally uncomfortable. But in Japan, if you don't have moments and pauses between some of the sentences or words, then that's uncomfortable. So these kind of pauses,
They're
like,
like, why is he
articulate.
filling this space so quickly?
Yeah, exactly. So it exists both spatially and temporally. And ma is this kind of blank space, this empty space, the gap, the silence between. It's ma is kind of expressed with the writing characters of a portal, so Chinese characters and Japanese, and it's a doorway entering into another. So it's a transition place. I always think of ma as like the gap between your in-breath and your out-breath.
Oh, wow.
And that gap, you can stretch it and make it longer or not, or you can just notice it as it is. So just the noticing going into that awareness of the gap is kind of moving into a ma space. So it's this in between. It's like a liminal space in many ways.
Yeah.
Ma exists in the pause. And I'll give you one example of how I recognize it in Tokyo. Walking down the street in a busy street like Shibuya or Shinjuku, and there's just thousands of people everywhere. And you walk down the street and just no one's bumping into you, no one's touching you. It almost feels like I'm walking alone. So in that way, my exists there as well. It's kind of like this restrained intensity. It's a holding, it's like a shadow, it's a little bit deeper, it's witness. So I thought it was
You
really
know,
fascinating. Yeah.
yeah, I loved it. You know, when you shared that with me, it inspired me to kind of re-engineer so much of my upbringing because growing up in America, you were taught to fill those spaces. You were taught that if you leave space silent, you're not confident. You're not articulate. And we almost develop this skill of almost bullshitting when we should be silent, we should be quiet, we should be okay with processing. Before we go further, because you have so much to offer this conversation, I wish I could have you for like a workshop on this. But before we go further, what does silence mean to you?
I've become thinking about silence and obviously influenced by things I've read as well. But this idea that silence is not an emptiness or a void of something or anything, it's a quality unto itself. It's like a quality of attention and receptivity or presence, quality of presence, where, and there was an interesting book that I read recently, fairly recently, and so, and they went around asking people around the world, what is this exact same question? And the types of response people came back and said, well, I'm at my most silence when I'm, some of them would have said, meditating on the top of a mountain. But there were other types of responses that were seemingly contradictory. So, for example, a lumberjack would say, I'm at my most, I find my most silence, those deepest silences when I'm like cutting down a tree and I'm in the flow, and there's all this noise going on around. For me personally, silence is the ability to drop into my somatic experience in the here and now.
For
And
people who are not
in
aware what somatic is, just explain it.
so soma is of the body. So our intellect is connected always and every day to our sensory and motor system in our bodies. And the somatic is the ability to bring your attention, your awareness to the gap between your breaths, for example. And that's, of course, a practice. I don't always, do it extremely well, but when I'm able to drop into my physical body, the only place of the here and now where I can experience it is through that feeling, the sensory. That is a way, in some ways, and I come to a place of silence. How long I can prolong that is also dependent on my practice, my mood in the day, or I'm also interested in how it enables things to emerge. So it curates a condition for things to surface, the unseen to be suddenly heard, seen, or the unheard to be heard. And in the West, we answer the question before we understand the problem. And in the silence, there's a kind of prolonging an understanding of the nature of a problem, and then we can move forward with purpose. And I think that ability to be in the not knowing, like the great philosophers, Plato, and how wise she knows, she doesn't know, or exactly Socrates. But this idea of silence allows for not knowing, it allows for a curiosity and an emergence. On that note, I don't know what silence is for me. It's all of those things.
As you're speaking, everything in me is saying, allow him to work through his thoughts without butting in. Now, I know in a traditional podcast, you would edit those moments out. You would edit out silence. And this is why producing a podcast is interesting because in a conversation, if there are silent moments, I recently, you remember the first time you were on, we did a feature. In that feature, I ask people really interesting either-or questions like coffee or tea or silence or sound. And oftentimes people take time to respond. And this has made me really think about not editing those sound that silence out. Maybe giving the listener a more authentic experience because answers can be multi-tiered. Multi, it can mean different things. Maybe there is no answer to what silence means to you because it plays out so differently in so many different contexts. I've witnessed you do a TED talk, I've witnessed you in training, I've witnessed you in conversation over coffee. Where do you see it being most useful across the various areas of your life?
I think the most immediately useful is being able to manage stress, manage my own physiological states, and regulate emotions, because silence often needs to be sought out. So there's an intention behind it as well. It's easy to be to reach silence and drop into a present state up in the mountains somewhere supported. But being able to drop into a pocket of silence on a busy day surrounded by lots of people is what I often try to do. This will call centering. So just every hour, maybe, just coming to a sensory experience for 30 seconds. And that silence is almost like a disconnect from a focus state and coming back into a default mode network, just a wandering state. I think the silence is to be found in the breath. It's just this ally that's with us all the time, and all it needs is the attention, and we suddenly are in a space of silence. I think in this way, silence is receptivity as well. It's a place that's fertile. It's like this pregnant with something that's emerging and can unfold from. We were so used to and addicted to distraction, and sometimes in the silence there's a lack of distractions, but there's a certain quality there, and it enables a noticing that we otherwise can't reach when we're too busy and distracted with something else. And I think that's really valuable.
I've been thinking a lot recently, especially during this series, about how I think relationships are often destroyed in the noise. I feel like it's very difficult to love somebody and have that love continue to evolve and grow unless you have a really amazing relationship with silence. And by the way, for those who didn't hear the previous conversation with Colin, and Colin and I collaborate, we have conversations about random stuff. And so what I'm doing is inviting you into a conversation with us at this stage. I've been thinking a lot about the numbing effect of noise and in relationships in particular. So my father is going through a really, big challenge, and I noticed that every time we speak, there seems to be very little silence because there's like almost like a rush to solve what he's experiencing and the toll that's sort of taken on our relationship at the moment. And I'd love to know, you've done body work. I don't know how you explain it, but it's basically like a massage technique. Have you ever had been working on someone's body and they just want to talk and they're uncomfortable with the silence? And if so, what do you do and how do you navigate it?
So I do kahuna body work. My partner does it professionally and all the time, but I am tapped into that community. And so do kahuna from time to time.
Explain kahuna.
So kahuna is a call it temple style lomi lomi. It's a Hawaiian modality of body work that incorporates strong intention and breath. It's kind of like a there's a dance over the body, but it's very much tangible oils, using the arms, elbows, using the hands. And there's this beautiful modality of body work over the body.
A person lies down, and this modality is you channeling energy across their energy field. Sometimes you touch, sometimes you don't. Just explain the
No,
actual quiz. This may be very foreign to a lot of people.
it's a lot more grounded than that. It's not me channeling anyone's energy. It's just me simply working on a person's body with oil, using a technique from Hawaii, and the quality of my presence influences the quality of the massage and the way they receive it.
Okay.
So I'm always normally touching. Yes, there's a there's different there's many different ways to approach this body work. But as I say, my partner and her partners are the pros. I'm a host.
Okay.
But I do learn a lot from the body work. The one thing is about learning to incorporate your breath with movement. And when we can tie movement with the breath, even a massage that's happening on you, and be able to breathe through it and be present with it, it can drop our whole nervous system into a state of silence, into a parasympathetic state, which is conducive for rest and relax. And sometimes people are very, very tight and holding in their bodies and unable to be receptive in this contraction. And I think silence is almost like an opening and softening. So body work can help with that opening, I think, to a huge degree.
One of the things that I've been playing around with And I think this happened after the second episode of this series, which was about chatter, discovering silence in sound. And in the midst of a lot of chaos. So I read this book called Writing Down the Bones by a Harvard researcher. And it spoke about how, like, going, you kind of mentioned this with the lumberjack chopping down wood. If you go into, for example, a coffee shop, that you can find silence in a lot of noise. Ultimately, I've been thinking about how silence is always there. You know, I'd love your thoughts on that. You know, I want to leave the audience with a few resources. I read a wonderful book called The Lost Art of Silence. I think you have a book that you've kind of read around the specific type of silence as well that you mentioned called Golden. Discovering silence when there's a lot of noise that you can't control. What are your thoughts on that?
Discovering silence and a lot of noise. I think that it's a practice as well, reaching a space of silence and curating and cultivating that inner silence, regardless of what's going externally, is part of a practice. And I think it's absolutely attainable. Your question reminds me of again, a story that I read, the book that you mentioned, Golden, The Power of Silence in a World of Noise. That was Justin Horn and Lee Moth. There was a that did they followed the story of a prisoner who was sent to prison, who it turns out he was falsely accused, but he had to spend up to eight years in a maxi prison, surrounded by death row inmates, etc. It
Wow.
was very loud, very noisy all the time, but he managed to become a meditation master and a breathing master, and managed to acquire a very high degree of proficiency despite all the noise that was constantly around him. So you'd have to create this practice where he was able to drop into a container of silence, in the context of all this like noise, sometimes very strange, excruciating things happening around him. So I think it's a very interesting question around, but I do think that there's a pocket that we can cultivate for ourselves that can be a place for silence that will nurture us in a similar way as if we were not surrounded by the noise.
You know, for anyone listening who's going, silence terrifies me. Like, I feel lonely. I think of death. I think of this punishing sense of having to confront myself, the screams, the potential that you haven't tapped into. For if you are struggling with that side of silence, you know, I would encourage you to continue on this journey of connecting and thinking about mind and body and the relationship between your mind and body. I mean, it's one of the things that I really cherish about your work, Colin, is that, you know, you approach this relationship between mind and body in a way that, I mean, there's a global community of people like yourselves that have taken this very, very seriously. And I really wanted to see it mainstream. I feel like there's only like a fringe group of people who are operating and trying to understand this. And maybe I'm naive, but I would think if you ask the average person in the street, what is that kind of core relationship between their mind and body, they wouldn't have much of an answer. Where would somebody start on thinking about connecting their mind and body? Where would you say would be a good starting point?
Again, it's a cultivation of a practice. It's about finding a way to make it a habit to bring your attention to the sensory space also. How you're feeling. Coming out of the constant rush of the mind and the imagination that transcends space and time and is always occupying these spaces, and it rushes around all over the place. The only way to enter the present moment is through the sensory experience, through the body. And the more we can explore and dip into that in the moment sensory experience, and then intentionally with awareness go back to the intellect, the more we build the bridges of connection and flexibility to move between these two centers of intellect and experience. And so I think the breath is a beautiful way always to bring awareness to the breath, and then allow that to be a portal into an awareness of the body, especially when we're in a high stress state, because this has a physical, tangible, emotional, sensory effect on our body. If we can identify what that feels like in our body, we begin to start creating a range of choice for how we want to respond to external situations. I think that maintaining homeostasis, the balance within ourselves to be able to move between activation and rest and relaxation. If we're constantly staying in an activated fight or flight, then we undermine our ability to show up and be creative and allow for an emergence of something new. And silence and spaces in between allow us to rest there.
Yeah, I want to close by, and again, if you are still listening at this point, you're going to find this really interesting. Around the idea of slowing down, and you speak a lot about slowing down. And I'm thinking slowing down can be a gateway to silence. It's a gateway to a healthier relationship with silence, almost like a bridge. You can see. So, yeah, and I'd like for you to share a little bit about your thoughts about that. And maybe if you want to share a little bit about what you've learned in theater and how slowing down can help with a healthier relationship with yourself and the audience as well, or not. It's up to you.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. You can consider that you can move silently as well. Silence exists in the absence of sound, but it also exists in the absence of loss of movement. And so slowness is a form of a physical expression, embodiment of silence. And when we move our body, our attention has to go to our motor and sensory to make sure that we're moving through the space properly, as opposed to when we're sitting quietly and our mind has nowhere else to focus on, and we become very, very busy in the chatter of our mind. So movement, both by virtue of it being really slow movement, where you have to be quite physical, physically present and attentive to the nature of those movements, also bring us into the sensory, into the moment. Also moving really slowly is a great way to disrupt the habitual reactionary way in which you move through the world and start creating a interesting new pathways into an experience of self. There's something special about slowness. It requires an intentionality that is kind of like on the river of silence. It's more of a beauty. So slowing down is available to us all the time. We can actually just slow down our motor system. We can slow down our allow our thinking to slow down to be influenced by the fact that we're moving slowly in an intentional way. I think it's again a practice. And slowing down slow for me is only interesting because it can go fast again, because it's the opposite of moving quickly. These two reinforce each other. There's this, something beautiful and creative around contrast. And so slow and fast together is a beautiful dance. Slowing down is also a way of, it's a practice of connecting with self, developing a practice which you apply again later. It's slowing down is a stretching that gap between impulse and response. Coming back to full circles, the elastic gap. Hey, Timothy, you remember
Yeah.
that?
Colin, let me tell you, man, like I have so much value for how your mind works and the journey that you're on. I mean, you've traveled the whole world. Well, you've traveled, a huge chunk of the world, and your perspective and how grounded you are adds so much value. And I really appreciate you helping me close this out with a conversation that I want to continue, and I don't see this as an end. So I know it's a three-part series, but that's just kind of how we have to frame this. So if you're listening wherever you are and you follow this series, continue this conversation, continue slowing down, stay on this journey, follow Colin's work. Where can they find you? Where can they connect with you if they want to have you as a talk, if you want to do a talk and understand some of this a bit more?
I'm on LinkedIn, Colin Skelton, and then also moveyourthinking.co.za.
Yeah, move
That's
yourthinking.co.za. Colin, thank you so much. I think you're somewhere by a beach somewhere. Go enjoy the beach, and we'll catch up soon when we're in the same city, okay?
Hey, Timothy, and thank you for your kind words, dude. I really appreciate it and I love your work. So it's great to know you, and I love to connect again soon. Thanks, bro.